Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest is Larry Pinkney. It's great to have Larry back. We've got a lot. Well, Larry is an activist in the best sense of the word, and he's been on the receiving end of the stuff that he is very, very active against now. Literally punished for things that never should have been happening, never should have happened to him or to anybody else. He knows it firsthand. He can talk about it. He sure can explain it. He's written about it. He knows America's dark side the way, hopefully, listeners to this program never will have to find out firsthand. We've got a lot we want to talk about today. Always an update on Ukraine, because the horrors there go on a daily basis. It keeps me busy writing daily articles on what's going on, literally every single day, now for over 3 months. Daily articles, some days two articles, some days even three articles, because there's so much happening, important stuff that people need to know about. I'm not the only one, but a lot of good people are exposing the imperial lies that proliferate aggressively, dare I say, in the New York Times, on Media Scoundrel TV, other Western countries in America. Goes on nonstop. Let me briefly mention two important things, and we can discuss them in more detail with Larry on the program. Number one, France is a stalking horse for Washington. Let's just call France, at least when it comes to Syria, a stooge, a U.S. stooge. It submitted a draft resolution to the Security Council, irresponsibly accusing the Assad government of crimes committed against it. In other words, the victims are blamed for imperial crimes. It urged that Assad and his government officials, don't know if specific ones were named. I haven't read the resolution, but I know the gist of it. I've got a few quotes from it. But it wants him and his officials brought to the International Criminal Court to be prosecuted for these crimes. Well, the International Criminal Court is an imperial organization. Nothing else but that. It's different from the World Court, from the International Court of Justice. The International Court of Justice goes after countries on crimes they commit. And occasionally, something good comes out of their rulings. The International Criminal Court goes after individuals in countries. What does it do? It supports the perpetrators of crimes. It prosecutes the victims of crimes, the Western crimes. The victims are usually in the Middle East or in other parts of the world, Eurasia, wherever. Syria is wrongfully blamed for Washington-led crimes against it. The idea of bringing Syria to the International Criminal Court is a gross case of injustice. Well, there are ways of getting around the ICC. There could be special tribunals set up that do not need Security Council authorization. Watch for that to happen at some point. Well, you know, they can want these people brought to a special court, but you got to go in and get them. They're certainly not going to volunteer and go there on their own, which they won't, nor should they. And everybody should responsibly support the people of Syria fighting Western imperialism, because that's what's going on. Anyway, I wrote an article this morning saying that Russia and China Russia explicitly said it would veto the proposal drafted. China was expected to veto it as well. Both countries vetoed three times previous irresponsible Security Council resolutions. What do these resolutions really want to do? Thin cover for authorization for the UN chapters, UN charters, Chapter 7, so-called Chapter 7. What does Chapter 7 do? It authorizes military action against countries it claims are committing lawless aggression. Basically, what the Security Council wants is Libya 2.0. You know, another bombs away, U.S.-led NATO campaign against another country, more intensively ravaging and destroy it. So what did Russia and China do? They acted as expected. Just hours ago, it's a little after 1 o'clock in the East, I think it was around 10 a.m., I think discussion in the Security Council began. So some minutes after the discussion began, it ended, the voting took place. Let's say within 30 minutes it could have been, maybe around 11:30 Eastern Time. The voting took place. Russia and China were the only profiles of courage in the Security Council. Something like 5 dozen countries in the General Assembly went along with Washington. But how, why did they go along? They were pressured to go along. Most of them didn't want to go along, but they were pressured, they were bullied, they were threatened, so they went along. They didn't have to, but they did. Russia and China acted responsibly. They vetoed the resolution. There's all kinds of flack being thrown at them. A so-called NGO organization representing various groups like Human Rights Watch and some others denounced their veto. In other words, they support blaming victims for imperial crimes. I think you can find their denunciation online. I have a copy of it. I don't think it's too long. Anybody can read it and see exactly what they said. That's the first issue I wanted to cover, that Russia, at least for the time being, stopped all-out Western aggression against another country. In other words, turning Syria entirely into another Libya, into another Iraq, into another Afghanistan. They've already done plenty. Obama is responsible for tens of thousands of Syrians killed, along with all the others he's killed in all these other countries, including the proxy wars raging all over the place. The other issue is a big issue. It's certainly not a war and peace issue, but it is extremely important. Yesterday, and I wrote several articles on it, I did a follow-up one today, an historic trade deal, the largest bilateral trade deal ever consummated between two countries. Russia and China did so. It supplies Russian natural gas to China. There are other agreements that were agreed along with this for various industrial products, munitions, technology, Russian technology, various products China has that Russia wants access to. A huge deal. But the gas deal alone over the next 30 years is worth at least around $400 billion. It will increase going forward, depending on China's needs. It could easily expand to double that amount, or dare I say, even a $1 trillion bilateral deal. There's never been anything like this in trade history. But it was agreed to yesterday. And how did the major media report it? The ones I call the scoundrel media. They misreported it. The New York Times first said no deal was consummated. And I began an article saying they ate crow, but they didn't admit they ate crow. They did a follow-up article hours later, and they said it appeared that a deal was consummated, but it misreported the deal. It misreported it. It claimed it wasn't a deal that was signed. It was a memorandum of understanding, and they need to go back to negotiations to work out the details. False. There were two things signed. It's on various websites. I believe it's on a China website. It's on a Russian website. And I'll read to you what it says. Here it is. Two documents were signed. I didn't put it in quotes. I just said, number one, Russia's energy minister, Alexander Novak, and China's National Energy Administration director, Wang Jingzhong, signed a memorandum of understanding. Hold on, I'm not done. Signed a memorandum of understanding on delivering Russian gas to China. Number two, Gazprom, the big Russian gas company, Gazprom CEO Alexei Miller and China National Petroleum Corporation head Xu Jinping, as opposed to Xi Jinping, China's president, Xu Jinping signed a, quote, purchase and sale contract, unquote, to supply China's needs for the next 30 years. Putin said, implementation begins essentially straight away. May 22nd, today, doing so, quote, makes it possible to begin the next project with our Chinese partners, namely to begin working on Western supply route. He referred to supplying gas from Western Siberian resources. Secondly, he said, it's, quote, possible for us to realize our plans to develop Russia's gas industry by connecting the eastern and western parts of extraction with the appropriate infrastructure. Quote again, If need be, supplies can be diversified from the west to the east and from the east to the west. Russia is one of the most resource-intensive countries in the world. It is loaded with strategic resources. You name them, Russia's got them. Well, Russia is by far the largest country in geographical territory in the world. I don't know offhand how many times America can fit into Russia, but it's a good number of times. It's a fair number of times, including Alaska. I mean, Russia is really, really huge, even with all the republics gone. It's a huge country geographically, and it's loaded with resources, land resources, offshore resources. It's the largest gas producer in the world. It's one of the largest oil producers in the world. And there's lots of stuff that's yet to be discovered. Just imagine in the next decade or two how much more will be discovered that Russia suspects is there, but hasn't, but is so busy dealing what it knows it has, so it'll get around to the rest when it needs to. It'll develop them. It'll begin selling them. And Washington wants to get its dirty hands on all of it to steal them from Russia the way it wants to steal them from all other countries. Anyway, the deal is absolutely monumental. It's historic. And one more vital thing. These countries will begin trading outside the dollar system. Big, big stuff as well. They'll bypass the dollar. They'll trade in their own currencies, the Russian ruble, the Chinese yuan, or renminbi, and doing so weakens the dollar. America needs a strong dollar to finance its imperial project. That's the way imperial wars are waged. You don't wage them by wishing for them. You need lots of big bucks to do it. You need a way to create those big bucks. You weaken the dollar. You eliminate it at some point, hopefully, as the world's reserve currency. And countries will run away from it like rats deserting a sinking ship. That's the future of America. That's the future of sapping its strength. That's the future of ending its imperial wars. That's the bright future we can look forward to if this can happen before America ends up destroying humanity, before this wonderful project gets off, it's already gotten off the ground, but before it can be completed. Larry, I want to get you into this. I didn't mean to go into such detail, but I wanted to lay the groundwork for these two things, and we can jump into Ukraine as well. All of this is extremely important, along with what's going on in Ukraine. Listeners need to go about it. You can go to my blog site, Steve Lenman blog. My latest article is titled Historic Sino-Russian Trade Deal Signed. You can go to the previous day. You can read what I wrote about irresponsible China bashing, scoundrel media doing the same thing. You can read my latest article. Well, my latest article in Syria will go out tomorrow about the upcoming, I wrote another article on the upcoming June elections. They will be a democratic elections. They'll be widely monitored. They'll be independently monitored. The parliamentary elections of 2012 were absolutely democratic. The elections that go on in America, the presidential election will be the same thing. Initially, there were 24 candidates that submitted their applications. I picked off websites, including the Syrian websites, that said they were approved, but apparently the Constitutional Court of Syria had second thoughts, and now only three candidates were approved. The others didn't fulfill all of the obligations, but three candidates will compete. It really doesn't matter whether it's 3 or 30 or 300. The little information about the popularity of various candidates is that Assad has minimally 70% support. He may end up with 80% support, and it doesn't surprise me one bit. If I was in Syria, he absolutely would have my vote. So he is slam dunk certain to win, and Syria needs him. It needs him. He'll win. The elections will be denounced, just like the parliamentary elections were denounced in 2012. It doesn't matter. There are demonstrations taking place all across Syria, responsible demonstrations with Syrian flags, with banners, with Assad's photos all over the place. Syrians supporting Assad. They want nobody else to lead them. He is waging a responsible battle to free Syria from Western-supported death squads that have been ravaging the country, and Syrians want no one else to do it. So he'll be reelected. He'll get another term. It'll be his last one. And Syria's constitution, very, very important. Syria's constitution that was voted overwhelmingly for by Syrians by national referendum in 2012, also independently monitored. No irregularities were found. Syria's constitution mandates that this election take place before Assad's current tenure runs out in July. So the date is June 3rd. It could have been a week or two later. It didn't matter. It will be June 3rd. It will be democratic. He will win. He will be denounced. Follow the results. I absolutely will write about the election. It'll be posted on my blog site the day after the election takes place. You will get a full and accurate account of what took place. Larry, I honestly didn't mean to jump to go on that long, but let me let you jump in on the vetoing of the Syrian resolution, on the trade deal, on Ukraine. Jump in on any one of those you want, or anything else.
Well, I'm delighted, frankly, Stephen, my brother. I'm delighted just to listen to your analysis. As always, it's right on point. So I have no problem with your quote going on. It's wonderful, absolutely wonderful. My comment, I really want to comment about a number of these things. With respect, first of all, to the deal between the People's Republic of China and Russia, I think it's very, very noteworthy that the corporate stream, lamestream, lying stream U.S. media, or what should really just say Western media, first omitted, then lied, and is really continuing to lie about that agreement and what it actually means. And I think it's really important to understand why they're lying. They're lying because the implication of this agreement between China and Russia are enormous, not only for China and Russia, but really for the planet, for the globe. And it's yet another sign of the West and the U.S. in particular's weakening imperialistic abilities. The United States and its lackeys, because that's what they are, flunkies, lackeys, are essentially forced to have to engage in the one thing that they seem to constantly turn to, and that's war, 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 military, military, military. The fact, now I'm sort of segueing over to the veto that both China and Russia engaged in. First of all, I think it was extremely important that they veto and I'm just going to be blunt, the U.S. desire and the West desire in general to smash Syria, just like they smashed Libya. And which, by the way, folks, want to remind people, Libya is Africa. It is North Africa. You have a so-called African-American president. You see, he's nothing but a stooge. He's a stooge. He's a willing stooge. His hands are bloody as a result of what he has done in Libya. Tens of thousands of black Libyans, and I say this very, very sadly, but very strongly, tens of thousands of black Libyans have been massacred and are still being massacred in Libya. And this is, of course, what the so-called black U.S. president knew would happen, and to be blunt, wanted to happen because it pleases his imperialist masters, right? And so they want the same thing. When I say the same thing, I mean the murder and the destabilization. They want this same kind of thing in Syria. Why, they would like to destabilize the entire world if they can. So thank goodness for Russia and China standing up to these hypocritical, bloodthirsty, imperialistic dogs of war. And, you know, that's what I really have to say, that they are. They're dogs of war. Obama is the biggest dog of war. He's Mr. Drone Man. He's a bloody liar. And he continues to do so. But you see, as you talked about, Stephen, and you made it very clear, this corporate stream, lame stream, lying stream media, is what, really can be considered nothing more than, Obama's propaganda arm. You know, and we need to understand that. So those are my comments. I'm sure I'll have more. But I'll turn it back to you, my brother.
Oh, indeed. Going back to Libya just for a minute, Larry. Of course, the black Libyans, as you call them, they were contract workers. They came in. These were just ordinary people who wanted jobs to make some money to support their families. They weren't political. They were falsely accused of supporting Gaddafi. Well, I mean, of supporting Gaddafi. I mean, there's nothing wrong with supporting Gaddafi. Had I been there, I would have supported Gaddafi because Gaddafi supported his own people. He certainly didn't wage war against them. But these black workers were ruthlessly slaughtered, just massacred in one area after another. And I remember in 2011, Larry, writing about them, writing a number of articles about them, and the mainstream media, the scoundrel media, basically playing a cover-up. And it's the reason that I call publications like the New York Times a de facto Washington House organ, just regurgitating the deplorable propaganda that comes out on a regular basis. And, I mean, this is the role of the New York Times. It has a new executive editor now. The old editor, Jill Abramson, is gone. I wrote an article about her. She's gone. There's a new editor in, a man named Dean Baquet. He replaced Abramson. The names and faces change. The policy remains exactly the same. The imperial support remains. It really is deplorable. And if you think you're going to get good information out of the New York Times, you're living in a dream world, a fantasy world, because you sure won't get it. It's never been that way, but it really is about as bad today as it's ever been. Post the 9/11 event, it really turned into the most ruthless propaganda machine, with Judith Miller being the previous lead propagandist leading up to the Iraq War. But there were lots of Judith Millers on the Times staff, and there were too many others just like her on the other major media staff, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, my own Chicago Tribune. It really is a deplorable situation, Larry. And if you want to know what the truth is, you can read what they say and just turn it upside down. Turn it
right
upside down, and you know exactly
that's right
what's going on.
That's right. That's right. You know, let me jump back for a minute to Libya. You know, and I want to just share this with the audience. The only person that I've met, that I have actually physically met, who I can honestly say looked almost exactly, I'm talking physically, like me, was ironically, Stephen, a Libyan. And this was years ago in London, England. And it was just an incredible experience. We both looked at each other. We were in a pub, and we both were staring at each other because it was like we were looking in a mirror. So we approached each other, began to talk. This was back in the mid-70s, I believe, and, you know, I asked him so many questions about Libya, and he asked me many, many questions about the struggle in the United States. I feel a certain affinity, and this man, this brother was in fact a Libyan. He had, long roots, historical roots. In Libya, he and his family, or I should say via his family. But anyway, so I feel such pain and anger and rage, at this despicable, bloodthirsty, lying, hypocritical Barack Obama. You know, the whole idea of us having, when I say us, now I'm talking about the United States, the whole idea of people in the United States having a free press is absurd. That is to say, if we mean by that press the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune, or, you know, we can go on an endless list that won't be missed, as Gilt God Aaron would say. This is no free press. This is no honest press. And it eats crow constantly with respect to telling the truth. I don't even think it's possible anymore for these outlets to tell the truth. They have been in bed for so long and so deeply with the power elite, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, and for the last amount of years it's been primarily the Democrats. But they do the same thing with the Republicans. They play this little game. And I'm hoping that shows and programs and articles, Stephen, such as yours, will keep people at least to some degree cognizant of what is really going on, because we're not going to find out from this despicable vomit-infested so-called news media that we have in this nation. But I'm wondering if we could go back a little bit more. I'd like to hear your thoughts, even though this is your program. I would like to hear your thoughts, my brother, on what's occurring in Ukraine, and then I'll share mine, if that's okay with you.
Oh, that's fine. I'll be a little brief. Right now, I believe, of course, it's about 8 hours later. It's after 1:30 p.m. in New York. And it's 8 hours later in Ukraine, so that would make it 9:30 in the evening. And the last I heard, the war in eastern Ukraine continues. We've got an illegitimate, coup-appointed, fascist, putschist government running things in Kiev. It has full support from Washington. It has full support from what I call rogue EU nations. It's supporting the worst of their crimes. The Kiev regime is waging war on its own people. And really, it's unprecedented in one respect, Larry, and I wrote about this in an article I'll put out tomorrow. There will be so-called elections. They're rigged elections. They're phony elections that'll take place on Sunday, supposedly nationwide in Ukraine. They'll be totally illegitimate. They will simply legitimize the illegitimate, legitimize fascist rule. There isn't one Democrat on the ballot, as I put it in my article and a previous one. Democracy is excluded from the ballot. There is no democratic choice. The Ukrainian people can only vote for one thing. You can vote for fascism in column A, in column B. I don't know how many columns there are. I lost count of the number of candidates running. There are only two or three that matter, and it doesn't really matter who wins. It looks like a billionaire oligarch will win. He's a fascist who simply wants to better his own bottom line. I don't know how many billions he has, but he wants billions more. It looks like he's going to win. Looks like he'll set the policy up to make sure that he does win. But while lawless aggression is going on by the Ukrainian military against its own people in the east, we're going to have these phony elections taking place at the same time. Talk about an unprecedented event, Larry. I mean, it's astonishing. And not a word about explaining this in the scoundrel media. Go to the New York Times, you won't see a word of explanation about this. They're going to portray these elections as democratic. They downplay what's going on. They basically call the freedom-fighting Ukrainians in the East, they call them terrorists. Yeah, they're terrorists, all right. They're fighting terrorists. The only terrorists in Ukraine are the ones that operate in Ukraine and the ones that operate in Washington and EU capital supporting them. So you've got this going on. There's some good news. There have been Russian journalists that were seized, abducted, interrogated viciously, I imagine, at least some of them. One was treated rather well. And I wrote an article that I got out yesterday afternoon. It was an extra article I wrote. I got it out in the PM. I got two articles out in the AM. This one out in the PM. And a Russian journalist, a so-called stringer for RT International, anybody can follow daily online, or I have an RT channel on my cable line up in Chicago. I can watch them on television. I watch them at least once a day, sometimes twice a day, 30-minute programs. I generally skip the other stuff they have on. I simply want a news roundup to find out what's going on, honest reporting, and they give it to you. But anybody can tune in, anybody can access them online and access all of their programming, including documentaries, including special programs, lots of great stuff, at least most of it very, very worthwhile to follow. This stringer, Graham Phillips, reported courageously from Ukraine. He was abducted at a checkpoint. He disappeared for 36 hours. He could have been killed. He could have been tortured. He could have been put before a kangaroo court. He could have been brutalized in many ways. He could have been imprisoned. I mean, he could have been isolated. Nobody might have heard from him again. But he was lucky. He got out. He's a UK national. That makes a difference. He worked for RT, which was a black mark against him. But he was a UK national. I don't know what the British embassy did in Kiev. Maybe they pulled the right strings and they got him out. Maybe that's why he's free. But he came out. You can go to RT's website. You can catch a reasonably detailed interview by him explaining what he went through. He said he was treated well. He was very honest. He's an honest journalist. He reports what happened. He said they treated him well. They fed him. They didn't beat up on him. And then they let him go. And I wrote about it. You can read it in my article tomorrow. It'll be on my blog site. It's not out yet. It's all written. It'll be out tomorrow. You can read about it there. But you can get an immediate account by going to RT's website. He's lucky. But there were two other Russian journalists held. Their names I need to have in front of me to read. They're the kind of names that are hard to remember unless you're reading them. They belong to a Russian media outlet called Fast News, with a capital F, a capital N, one word together. They are still being held since last Sunday. They're incommunicado. Nobody knows what's happened to them. But they've been accused of spurious charges, aiding and abetting terrorism, transporting weapons. Absolutely false charges. But they could be in very, very serious trouble. Will they be released? I've heard not a word about their being released. If they are released, you can bet you they'll be interviewed on RT. They'll be interviewed on Voice of Russia, a radio broadcast. Both of them had me on as guests. Voice of Russia more recently. RT has had me twice on their Truth Seeker program, an excellent program. They have several people on at the same time. They have clips of things they say on various topics. There is still a program that I have recorded comments on. It'll air, as I understand it, Sunday evening, the 25th. It was originally scheduled for the 18th. They pushed it back to the 25th, and they had it on. But I listened to myself the last time they had me on. They quoted exactly things I said. It'll be on again. Anybody can catch it. And RT has repeat programs. Or you can go to its website, and you can go right to where the program is. Once it's listed there, and you can watch it, you can listen to it, you can see what it says. I don't know who the other guests are, but it's an excellent program. It's one well worth watching. If they invite me on again, I absolutely will go. I'm delighted to go on. And Voice of Russia has had me on a number of times. These are excellent programs. Press TV has me on all the time. Sometimes they have me on twice a day. Sometimes they have me on one program, then another program. I don't think they've ever had me on three times in one day, Larry. but they had me on one program, and then they came back and they asked me to record some comments on a separate topic, and I've been delighted to do that. Let me let you jump back in. The war on Syria continues to rage against freedom fighters, against civilians. We've got the horrors going on with the upcoming election, a sham election, and I'm following all this stuff, and you can read about it daily in my articles. Go to my blog site, Steve Lindman Blog. You'll see daily articles on Ukraine. You see the other articles I write about. I put out a new one this morning called Israeli State Terror. You want to know about Israeli soldiers executing Palestinian children? One of them shot in the back, another shot at close range in the chest, murdered in cold blood. It's all in my article. You can go and read it. It's not the first time. I've got other articles on other topics, important stuff, truthful information. I mean, it's stuff that I learn every time I write this stuff, Larry, and I believe what I want to do is simply pass on important information to others. When I learn important stuff and I think it's important, I write about it and I want to pass it on to other people. I've got another topic already in mind. I've got two articles pretty much drafted for tomorrow. I'm going to finish both of them up. I've got another one in mind. It's supporting a friend and a regular guest on this program, Denny Rancourt, a tenured University of Ottawa professor. He was framed. He was drummed out of the university. He's going through a horrible situation defending himself. He's not only going up his adversaries who have no credibility, he's going up against the Canadian courts who are on the wrong side. They're supporting the perpetrators and they're denying Denny a right to responsibly defend himself. And I plan an article with some information on that, exposing their lawlessness, because it's important to say I support Denny. He's involved heavily in his case right now. As soon as this clears, he's both acting in his own defense, and he's his own lawyer because he's got no money. He comes on here and he asks people to send him anything they can. A buck here, a buck there, $5, $10, anything people can send. If you want to know how to do it, just Google Denny's name. He's got two websites. But if you just Google his name, Denis Denis, silent S in French, Rancourt, R-A-N-C-O-U-R-T. Google it. You come to his two websites. There's information on how you can support him. If there's a guy who really deserves support, it's Denny. He's going through a terrible ordeal. He has my support 100% and then some. I've written several times about him, and I'll write another article in his support. He asked me to do it this morning. I saw exactly what he was talking about, and I said, Denny, absolutely, I'm going to jump on this. Give me a day or two. I'm involved in a lot of stuff, but this is I'm not going to delay on this. I'm going to get right on it. I'm going to write about this. I'm going to get more people to know. I'm going to send it out to lots of web editors. I'm going to ask them to please post it to support his struggle for justice, and it'll absolutely go up on my blog to do it as well. Larry, let me let you get back. And I'm hogging too much of this program. I want my guests to hog it.
Well, no. I'm extremely interested also in what you described just now about how do I pronounce his last name?
Rancourt, silent T and silent S. So okay. D-E-N-I-S, one N, not Dennis, but Denis, D-E-N-I-S, mm-hmm. Rancourt, R-A-N-C-O-U-R-T, but you don't pronounce the T. If I remember my French right, it's been a long time since I took French.
Denis. Okay, well, you know, having myself, and I have to totally agree, you know, when I was in prison, I was first in prison by the Canadian government, of course, at the behest of the United States government. And when I took my case to the United Nations, it was against, of course, the government of Canada and the United States. But since I was being held in Canada, I had to go through Canada in order to get to the United Nations.
Larry, one quick addition to what you said. When you were politically imprisoned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You certainly didn't commit any crimes when you were politically imprisoned.
Of course not. I mean, the name of the game is, and I would remind our listeners to remember COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, which, by the way, has not gone away. The program was set up to neutralize, to discredit, to frame, to murder. And if anybody would like to know how they do these things and how it happened with me, just go to the book, Saying No to Power. The book is, again, Saying No to Power. It's written by William Mandel, M-A-N-D-E-L, with an introduction by Howard Zinn. Mm. And I think everybody knows who Howard Zinn was. I hope so, anyway. And then just go to the back and look up my name, and you'll see that, you know, all kinds of vicious things were done and are still being done. The name of the game, and that's why I felt so strongly when you were talking about Denis, because I can relate. The name of the game is to frame, to discredit, to murder, to imprison, any and all of these things. And we have to understand that. This lamestream, vomitstream media that we have over here is constantly giving us disinformation and misinformation about other places, but they're also giving us disinformation, misinformation, or no information about what is occurring right here in the United States and Canada, and as far as it goes. So I can relate very, very much to what this brother is going through, and we do need to get behind him. We need to get behind all of our brothers and sisters, black, white, brown, red, yellow, all of them, right here on this continent, North American continent, because the same kind of viciousness, and that's what we better remember, the same kind of viciousness that our corporate government, it's really not ours, the corporate government carries out against Syria, for example, Libya, for another example, Venezuela, for another example, Cuba, for another example, countries all over the world. The same kind of viciousness that this corporate government carries out against the people of those countries, it is doing against us. It is being done against us, only it's being done on a slightly, and I do mean slightly, softer level. But sometimes it's not soft at all. It's just out and out vicious. and the media simply doesn't cover it, of course, the media, whatever that is. So I'm very, very touched by your description. I will make sure, please send me the article once you have it out, because I will make sure that it's posted on Black Activist Writers Guild. If people want to read my writings or see what I have been up to in terms of interviews and writings, etc., just go to Black Activist Writers Guild, WG. It stands WG for Writers Guild. Black Activist Writers Guild, WG.org. You'll see a lot of Stevens programs on there too, particularly the ones where I've had the honor to be on the program with them. But you'll see other programs as well. So, but Stephen, please send me that article, so I will make sure that it's posted on BOG, Black Activist Writers Guild.
Oh, I sure will, Larry. I've got two articles I'm putting out tomorrow. One is called Irresponsible Syria Bashing. Irresponsible, yeah. Indeed. I mean, if you know the facts, you know it's irresponsible. And a second article. I'm one of these days I'm going to run out of titles on Ukraine. I mean, how do you write articles every day, often two or more articles on the same topic for over 3 months? I mean, about around 100 straight days. How do you do that and not run out of titles, Larry?
You know when I want to.
On my blog site, when I want to put a new title in a folder and then include it in what I call a master folder, occasionally I'll come up with a title I used before. Well, I picked a title for tomorrow and I called it Kiev's War on Freedom, and I said, oh, I know this one's going to bounce. I had to have used that title before. To my surprise, I had not used it before. So my second article is called Kiev's War on Freedom. I'm basically recounting the RT journalist Phillips' release. I discuss the other two journalists who are still held, and I discuss Ukraine's war on the Eastern Ukrainians. It's basically an update. It's like a daily soap opera, Larry. I mean, you've got events that are going on a daily basis. It's all important. It's like a war correspondent. And I remember back in World War II, before there was any television, I remember Ernie Pyle, the most famous war correspondent in my lifetime, easily. Ernie Pyle, he was finally killed. He was right on the front lines reporting what was happening, and he was such a famous name in his day. If he had been born half a century later, he wouldn't have been famous, because they never would have let him get anywhere near the battle zone, because the last thing the imperial powers want to do is let an honest journalism report what's happening. But you could, if you want to bash the other side, they'll give you all the access that you want, and those are the kind of reporters that the Chicagoan Studs Terkel. Sadly, he's gone now. He lived into his 90s. He's gone now. And he called those journalists in bed with journalists. You know, embedded journalists. He called them in bed with journalists. And that's exactly what they are. They're propagandists. They support the party line. They go out with the U.S. or NATO forces, and they proliferate falseness, burying the most important things that readers and viewers so on want to know, and they absolutely refuse to get this stuff out. But there was good stuff gotten out in World War II, in the Korean War, in the Vietnam War, and then it all came to a screeching halt. But I'll send you the article. I'll send you both of them, Larry. You can use whichever one you want, and there'll be more coming out the next day.
We'll use both of them. But let me say that it's very interesting. You mentioned World War II, for example, when the U.S. was, quote-unquote, fighting fascism. Now, look at where we are. The United States is de facto fascist, okay? And I'm talking about the 21st century U.S., combination of corporate control and government, which is, in essence, de facto fascism. But let's go further. It is blatantly supporting fascism. For example, the fascism of the Kiev criminals, of the criminals, war criminals, let's call them what they are, war criminals in Kiev. But then, of course, they have war criminals supporting them. They have the war criminal Barack Obama, who is a warmongering, murdering liar, okay, and Joe Biden. They have the war criminals in the UK, And by that I mean the United Kingdom, Britain. They have the war criminals being, who are supporting them. So when you mention, it's sad to me in a way that I think of how there were indeed some hella, as we would say in California, hella correspondents, meaning great, great, honest, real war correspondents. But what we have now is, as you pointed out, Studs Terkel pointed out that you know, they are in bed with, they are in bed with fascism, corporatism. They are in bed with corporate plutocracy. They are in bed with the very, things that, when I say things, I'm talking about the methodologies that they use to oppress and repress and suppress, people all over the world, including folks right here in this country. So, it's sad. I was looking at some old footage of some of the, reports and reporters, from during World War II. And I was thinking to myself, and even Vietnam, for that matter, and I was thinking to myself, my God, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, we are at about maybe a 1.5. Maybe. I mean, that's how horrible, horrible the so-called media is over here. We've got to be our own media. We've got to, it's like you're doing, you know, Stephen, you're educating all of us, and that's what we have to do with each other. We have to educate. We know that what's coming out of Time Magazine, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, the Boston Globe, et cetera, et cetera. We know that that's vomit. We know it. We know it. Washington Post, it's vomit. It's lies. And I think it was you who said, I think you just said this today, Stephen, that if you want the truth, take what they say and turn it upside down. And it's ironic that you said that, because I happen to have been on a program just yesterday where I said exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. You want the truth, folks? Turn it upside down, and you'll get somewhere near the truth, if not the outright truth. You know. So now, back to you. I've had my say.
I think the Washington Post is a very instructive example, Larry, and I wrote about this before. I'll certainly mention it again, but Amazon bought the Washington Post some months back, last mm-hmm. year, and its CEO, Jeff Bezos, has a long-standing relationship with the CIA. Well, he signed a multi-hundred-million-dollar deal with the CIA, and the Washington Post actually reported this, and I wrote about it. I write so many articles, I forget what I said in what article, but I could do a Google search and find the main article I wrote about it. But it's public information. Even the Washington Post couldn't hide the fact that this was done. So you get a corporate CEO, he buys a newspaper, he uses it as a propaganda instrument, he gets in bed with the CIA, so the CIA effectively runs the Washington Post. Talk about a fraudulent media operation, Larry. I mean, if that isn't as bad as it gets, I don't know what is.
It's amazing that it is truly amazing, Stephen, that the people of this nation have not just totally vomited collectively and said, we are not going to allow this. I mean, imagine, own lock, stock, and barrel in bed with the Central Intelligence Agency, which, by the way, is an agency that not only does it spy, but it commits mass murder. It is responsible for fomenting bloody coups all over the world. It's been doing it for many decades. And this is an agency, or the agency, that in de facto terms owns the Washington Post. This is the height of insanity.
Yeah, it really is a deplorable situation with the media. One publication in the media actually cannot hide the fact of its tie to a spy organization that owns the publication. The deal that Bezos signed with the CIA brought him more money than he paid to buy the Washington Post. So the CIA basically has the Washington Post in its pocket publicly. It's public information, but it's not public information that it really has its tentacles into many of the other major publications, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Wall Street Journal, the television broadcasters and cable channels. You don't hear anything reported about this, but they have the same kinds of arrangements where they have their on-staff reporters basically serving as CIA operatives. They're not agents,
right,
but they're operatives serving the CIA's purpose. And it's no wonder that over 50 years ago, Jack Kennedy made a statement, and I remember quoting him. I don't remember when he said it, but I quoted him a number of times, saying one of the things he really wanted to do was to rip the CIA up into 1,000 or 1,000,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. He hated the CIA, and there's no question that the CIA was responsible for assassinating him. It certainly wasn't Oswald who had anything to do with it. It was the CIA, and certainly his antagonism with the CIA had one thing to do with it. His opposition to wars, he was a peacemaker. He transformed himself into a peacemaker, and that was the main reason that the powers that be wanted to get rid of him. But he despised the CIA 50 years ago, when really it was a shadow of what it is now.
Right. It was a shadow of what it is now. In fact, I was having a conversation some weeks ago with Cynthia McKinney, and Cynthia and I were talking about how these media outlets, she was saying precisely what you were saying, in fact, Stephen, the media outlets, these print media and television and radio media have been infested by propagandists who are working either directly or indirectly for government agencies, most notably the CIA and FBI, and most notably the CIA. So what we're getting is not news and information. All we're getting is straight propaganda. And this is, I mean, we just don't have a media. This is not a media. Time for us to wake up, turn what they say upside down, and we'll be somewhere near the truth. And that's on everything, not only externally, as far as external so-called news, but as far as internal so-called news, like the so-called Boston bombing. Give me a break. You know, it's just, we have to turn it upside down. You're so correct in saying that, Stephen.
Oh, there was a spurious statement about one of the surviving brothers claiming that he confessed to being involved in what went on. He confessed to absolutely nothing. Last year I wrote about, I'm surprised, but he was given about 6 minutes when he was recovering from the multiple gunshot wounds that were pumped into him. He had a conversation with his mother. I actually made contact with his mother, Larry. We exchanged a few emails. She thanked me for supporting him, but she said to him in the phone call, he had absolutely nothing to do with what went on in Boston. And the idea that you're getting reports now that he confessed to involvement in it is another one of what I call the big lies. He had nothing to do with it at all. He was framed. And they're going to imprison him for life. They're going to execute him. And of course, the media reports will lie. They'll claim he was involved. And again, I repeat, he had absolutely nothing to do with what went on, including his brother. Neither one of them. They were framed. This was a setup. It was an operation committed by Blackwater type killers. I forget the name of the organization, but they were right there. The FBI was directly involved. These were the ones. It was a classic false flag operation, and these kids were framed.
Right. You're absolutely correct. And, you know, I hate to say this, but the truth is the truth. The United States has become, in totality, the United States government has become nothing more than one huge false flag. It never tells the truth. It seems that it's even incapable of telling the truth, and it's all about framing, murdering, discrediting, etc. But the good thing about that is if we know that, then we can't be surprised. We will not function based on the vomit that we get if we know that. So that's the positive point but or thing about this. But this whole government, this corporate-owned, disgusting, lying, hypocritical government is one big false flag with this colored guy currently, and I say colored in quotation marks, this nominally black guy as the head honcho, the emperor of the empire. We cannot accept this any longer. We just cannot accept it, no matter who's the head honcho emperor of the empire. We cannot accept empire, period.
Yeah, I agree, Larry. We simply have to do something to combat this. And it takes people power to really do this. It can be done. It's been done before. I've discussed it. I've written plenty about how ordinary people can change things when they decide they want to do it. Certainly isn't something that happens quickly. It takes sustained effort. But it's happened before. We've gotten major things accomplished in America. But you've got to go out and struggle for them. The only way to do it is to do it nonviolently. I absolutely deplore violence because it only begets more of it. So it has to be done nonviolently. But civil disobedience, absolutely, is fine. You want to rattle chains, rattle plenty of them. But you got to keep rattling. You got to get enough people rattling them. And when enough people do it, anything is possible. And we can have real change in this country if enough people decide they'll tolerate nothing less than that. We've got a couple of minutes left, Larry. Let me toss it to you. Anything else in your mind you want to pass on?
Well, I just want to thank you. I always thank you, my brother, for having me on. It's a pleasure. It's almost like you and I are sitting in the living room just speaking with each other. And
that's
just wonderful. You know, I really want to thank you, and I want to thank your audience. And I just want to remind people that of what you just said, you know, that we are the ones with the power if we exercise it. If we don't use it, we lose it. But we need to exercise it. It's time for us to be fed up. So I do have faith, as we said in the day of the Black Panther Party, you know, all power to the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. And, of course, the government's going to do everything they can to keep us divided and therefore controlled. That's par for the course. We know that already. So let's move on and stand up and stand collectively together. That's all I have to say, other than, Stephen, it's always wonderful to join you in your radio living room.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it, Larry. I mean, I feel like we really are sitting in my living room having just a conversation and sharing it with an audience. And I wish we could all be sitting here in the same room, chiming in together and sharing important thoughts. Just imagine if all media were this way. We're just about out of time. I think the bell is going to ring. I think they have a trap door set under me. And when the time is up, zip, right through it I go. Larry, I look forward to getting you back. I'll shoot you an email off air. Join us again follow my archive programs on Thursdays and Fridays on live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Major topics, extraordinary guests. Make it a regular habit.